Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Naked Departure Talk Show. This show is live and interactive, and we invite the audience to join the discussion. You can call into the studio by clicking on the Skype button which appears on the show page, or by calling us on 1-914-205-5805. Alternatively, you can post your questions or comments in the chat room, which also appears on the show page. Thank you for tuning in. The management of Naked Departure Talk Show does not represent, endorse, or validate any views, opinions, products, or services promoted on this show.
Good morning. Today is... Oh, we're having some feedback. Today is... Let me put this on mute. Today is Monday, October 3rd, 2016. Let me get rid of some stuff. Okay, got rid of it. 2016, and I'm Sherry Veronica, and this show today, we wanted to talk about... One second. We wanted to talk about Christopher... What do you... How do you pronounce his last name? Hawksworth? Hello. Are you there? Charlie, are you there? Okay, hold on. I gotta get Charlie back. He was disconnected. One moment. Hi.
Okay, I think I'm back in the studio.
Yeah, welcome into the studio. I didn't even hear... What I did was... I took off all the sounds and all the stuff from off of Skype, and when you are disconnected, I'm now not hearing that. So maybe I should have the sounds in the background. I was trying to calm the studio, you know, from all the other outside sources, but that may not work. Anyhow, yes.
All's well that ends well. Well, thanks for having me again on your show, Veronica. It's always a pleasure. I noticed that we're getting lots of feedback from our shows, and today is going to be a slightly different topic, one that's very personal to me, one that is that resonates quite a lot with me on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, how do you pronounce his last name?
Christopher Hawksworth.
Hawksworth, yes. Yes, a lot of people are talking about his death because they're saying that a lot of the recent deaths in Barbados are drug-related, and the people all knew each other or were sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they were actually related. And I don't know if you know if Chris was related to the last guy, Ricardo. I think his name was Ricardo Bryan. But there's...
I honestly cannot speak about any of the relationships Chris may have with any of the above. I don't know. I don't even know. Outside of a friendship which I've had with Chris, I cannot say anything about any of the allegations made against Chris in terms of drug affiliation. I've got a stand-in policy with all my friends around the world, and some of them are involved in all types of businesses. I've always maintained with my friends that if you're doing anything that's not kosher or not legal, I don't want to know where, when, or how, so that if I'm ever asked, and I'm being asked now on international radio about it, I can say nothing. And I've always maintained that. Because, you know, I always focus on the friendship that I had with Chris, and that is the only thing I can speak about.
Okay. Okay, so tell us about Chris, because they're saying that he was into drugs. He once lived in the United States where he was deported, and I think you have some background information on that particular issue where maybe you can shed some light on that?
Again, any of those affiliations, I cannot speak to. And I'm being very honest about that. People listening to the show may think that I'm deliberately saying this because he was my friend. That is not true. I remember saying to Chris on many occasions, you know, our friendship is based purely on friendship. And when we speak, as a matter of fact, the only thing we ever talked about was my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only speak about some of the things that, like, for example, when I've heard of all the allegations that were leveled against him. I know every rumor and every allegation, every accusation, and I know quite a bit about his situation with the U.S. government when they had accused him of being involved in drug trafficking with his co-accused, the three gentlemen or two other gentlemen here in Barbados, and there was a fourth gentleman in Guyana who was involved in this situation, who was actually deported. He was taken from Trinidad and deported to the United States back then, and he went to trial, I believe. But it came out in the trial that the evidence that the DEA purported to have, was some of it was falsified, and it was not enough to bring a successful prosecution against Chris and the co-accused. And because of that, that case was subsequently dropped in the United States. The gentleman whose name is also Chris from Guyana, he told me firsthand, because I met with him about the situation, because I was doing an investigative report on it, and I did an interview on internet radio with these individuals, because I was very disturbed by the things that transpired at that time. The other guy, Chris from Guyana, he was arrested in Trinidad, extradited to the United States. He was arrested, incarcerated, and the investigation led to the discovery that the DEA agent who claimed he had some recording and other bits and pieces, much of it was fabricated, and that is where the U.S. dropped the charge. Now, they said to Chris, because I think he was in there, this is the other Chris from Guyana, they said to Chris, well, you've been in our company incarcerated for X amount of time. If you want to be done with this and have your immediate freedom, we are happy to deport you back to Guyana, providing you sign a document which stated that he had no basis to take any civil action against the U.S. government in exchange for his immediate freedom and subsequent deportation. The alternative to that, if he had not agreed, they had threatened him that they were going to take him from Washington to New York and start the process all over again. They would then charge him again in New York because they could not charge him in Washington twice for the same crime, because that is known as, I believe, double jeopardy. So they said, we will take you to New York, arrest you over again, prosecute you again, and it will take another 3 years. So you have a choice. You can stay at the pleasure of our prisons for another 3 years, or you can take the easy way out. We'll deport you back to Guyana, and you will have to sign a document that you can't take action. Now, fortunately, Chris Hawksworth and the other co-accused in Barbados, they did not sign that document because they were still in prison here waiting to be extradited. As you know, the processes in Barbados take a long time.
Yeah.
So they did not sign that document, and they then had the legal right to take action, and they actually did eventually through a UK attorney. Anyway, I'll get to that. Now, the U.S. government, at some point in time, made the Barbados government aware that there was no case to answer to in the United States. So I fail to understand why the Barbados government held Chris and the co-accused in solitary confinement for 2 to 3 years. And most of that time, the Barbados government would have known that there was no case to answer. So I'm puzzled why they held on to these gentlemen in prison for so long when they knew that the U.S. government had dropped the case. They knew the circumstances. So there's a lot to be answered to for that.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, a UK attorney who got wind of this, and I believe this may have come as a result of my interview, because I did a very comprehensive interview with Chris Hawksworth and the other Chris from Guyana, along with two attorneys, one from Texas and another attorney from Canada, who wanted to participate in the discussion online to give a legal perspective on it. When they discovered what had actually happened, they were appalled at the actions of the United States government. I mean, could they want someone so badly that they're prepared to infringe on the rights of people? I mean, but the United States government has been accused of doing this sort of thing for years. They would abuse their authority if they want to get you. And this is what happened. And when it got to a point where they could no longer hold on to their claim, they would have made the Barbados government aware, and I'm really confused.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that has stayed with me for, you know, to this day until I die, that is, you know, because the Barbados authorities have wanted to because of the allegations and the investigations and so on, I mean, they were very hard pressed to arrest and prosecute and, of course, convict Chris. I would hate to think that anxiety caused the Barbados government to incarcerate, you know, Chris and his co-accused for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I am waiting to hear a plausible reason for this. Now, when the attorney in the United Kingdom, I'm not sure how the connection was made between the UK attorney and Chris and his co-accused, but when he heard the circumstances, he offered his services because he was 100% sure that there was a case to be made against the US government. And since Chris and the co-accused, who were from Barbados, did not sign that document that they were not going to take any action against the US government, and it had a non-disclosure clauses in there as well, they were able to take action, and that action went on for quite some time. And at some point I lost communication with Chris about it, but I was made to understand that the US government was on the verge of conceding defeat, and there was a possible settlement, out of court settlement, to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the thought of Chris coming out of prison after suffering that incarceration and, you know, all that goes with it or comes with it, the psychological pressure and the emotional stress and so on, I fail to see why he would get involved in anything that could be related to the allegations or the suspicions of people when he was facing the possibility of a huge amount of money coming as a result of a settlement in a class action suit against the US government.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was told also that there was no action being taken against the Barbados government because there was little confidence that the Barbados government could afford to pay out if they had lost. So the focus was on the U.S. government. And even though the U.S. government would have at some point informed the Barbados authorities that there was no longer a case to be answered to the United States, the U.S. government was and still is culpable, because it was their actions or the actions of their representatives, i.e. the DEA agents, that caused the action, the class action suit to be brought against them. So they were culpable. And it was, in my opinion, a case that they were about to settle. So when I heard that Chris was missing and subsequently was found shot, I'm told that he was shot,
in the back of the head. That's execution style.
I was confused. And then, of course, the allegations in the press that, oh, well, and in the public domain, sorry, that, oh, well, it must be a drug deal gone bad and so on. It makes very little sense to me that a man with Chris's experience and intelligence would get involved in anything like that in the face of a payout by the U.S. government for a class action, for losing a class action suit.
So what else, what did he do other than, well, I can't even say other than selling drugs, because you are not saying that, but other than what he was accused of doing, what was his profession, do you know?
I know Chris as a hustler, wheeler, dealer type of guy, you know, buying and selling stuff. I've never, because there were so many allegations hovering around Chris's head over the years, I've known Chris for over 30 years, and I am proud to say that he was a very close friend of mine, but because of all these allegations hovering around, I deliberately and purposefully did not engage in any conversation with Chris ever about these, about what he actually does, because, you know, I thought it was best on, you know, to protect our friendship, because I know what it's like when you're being accused of certain things. I mean, come on, I'm in the spotlight as well, so I made a point of that. But I've heard everything, and I've said to Chris on many occasions, I don't know if the allegations are true, Chris, but if they are true, anytime, if you're doing anything, I don't want to know. I don't want to know where, when, how. You're my friend, and I want to preserve that friendship. And that is the honest truth. I said that to Chris on many occasions, so I cannot speak. And even if I did know, I wouldn't speak anyway.
No.
But the honest...
I am, but I can't remember. I don't know. Maybe I was tending to something on the back end because I was having some audio problems. Did you answer the question, what did he do? What was his profession? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Oh, no, I said I've known Chris as a wheeler-dealer type of guy. I've known Chris to buy cars and sell them, buy all types of bits and pieces and sell again. I can't put my finger on one particular profession to say that Chris was an accountant or a lawyer. I know Chris as a hustler.
Okay. So, okay, another word for hustler, and you're not saying this, I am. It's a con man. He's just trying to make money any way you can. So, obviously, you will not see him in the office with a coat or jacket and tie, and working at the bank or anything. He will be a hustler.
That word con man in Barbados so freely, it scares me. You know, if a man is a hustler, and I'm a hustler too, most people who do business are hustlers. Busy Williams is a hustler. Is he a con man? He's a hustler because he knows profit and loss. He knows a good deal. He knows what to buy low and sell high. That's what a hustler is. You know, a con man is someone who's going to deliberately trick you out of a situation, out of money, or to gain advantage. That is a con man. I can't say that, you know. They call intelligent people con men because you're smart, isn't
it? Okay, the thing about it is he didn't have a regular job. And it is alleged, and everyone is alleging that he was dealing drugs. In fact, in fact, they would say, quote unquote, big time drug dealer. He was in that. That was the profession. That was his hustle. So, excuse me. So to compare him to someone who's paying employees and paying taxes and trying to clean up, because that's all they do. They clean up their reputation and their image. I don't think he was in that particular category. So he died. He was missing for a couple hours, several hours, and then he showed up dead. He had a gunshot to the back of his head. He had a newspaper in his hand, like maybe he wasn't suspecting he was going to be dead on that particular day. And he was in a passenger seat, and we're hearing that someone is in police custody being questioned. What can you add to that?
Yeah, yes. I am very eagerly awaiting news on what transpired. I don't think we'll ever know the full story, but I'm really anxious for the police to you know, to find out some more information regarding this, because this is, I'm still in denial. I still can't believe that my friend for over 30 years is dead. I really can't believe it. I guess I have to go to the funeral and see him in the coffin or the casket to believe it. So it's I'm still in shock about this.
Okay, so you're saying 30 years of friendship. Was he a paying customer in your business?
No, Chris has never been a customer in business. Chris has referred customers to me.
Okay.
But he's never been. Chris has always managed to have a certain lifestyle, and Chris never had a problem having the interests of ladies, you know, on a social level. He did not need to be my customer.
Okay.
And another thing too, I missed it. That's just slipped my mind totally. But anyway, no, he's never been a customer of my business.
So let me ask you, how often did you see him, since you said that you are still in disbelief and you have to see him in the coffin? How often did you get together? How often did you see him? And when you did see him, what was it? Did you have lunch? Did he just come and sit on your couch and you just, like, shoot the breeze? What kind of, how did you?
I would go to Chris's home. I haven't seen Chris for a while now because the last time we spoke, I had a number of challenges shortly after the last time he spoke, and those challenges kept me very busy. So I hadn't seen Chris for about, I would say, 5 months or so. And we did speak on the phone a few times, but that did not affect our friendship. I mean, we're friends. We were going to be friends for life, and the only thing that ended the friendship was the fact that he was killed. But I used to go to Chris's home. We would meet for a drink somewhere. We would, he would come and see me. But we would never hang out. We would never go to a club together. We would never go party. We would never go because there's a lot of rumor and finger pointing against both of us. So we thought it best not to be out there like that. If I met him, it would be at his home for a drink or a chat, just to catch up on how things are going, and that's it.
Okay.
Chris was a guy that if I had a problem, any type of problem, financial, I could go to Chris, and or Chris would give me money to help my problem, you know, if it called for that. I mean, he was really a true friend to me.
Okay. So you've never bought drugs from him?
I'm sorry?
You've never bought drugs from him?
No, I've never bought drugs from anyone because I don't use drugs. They can say many things about me, but I think that even the ones that will point fingers and call me names with Quintana, Charles Lewis or Charlie Spice does not drink. He does not smoke, and he does not do drugs. Those are three things that I'm not known for.
Okay, you said that he never utilized your business. So, did you ever refer business to him? For instance, did you ever ask someone? Because in your business, people will say, "Well, do you know anyone that I can get some good weed from, or some good coke, or whatever?" Have you ever referred any of your clientele to him for purchase of these?
It is known that many people who subscribe to adult entertainment services partake in drug use. And many of these individuals are very prominent individuals, very wealthy individuals, very, very successful individuals. And if I'm ever asked by a client of a contact that can give them what they want, I would always refer to some other person that I know out and about in Barbados that I believe is a trustworthy individual. I would point in the right direction. I would never go get it for them.
Okay.
He's okay. But I've never referred anyone to Chris because, like I said, I've never discussed that business with Chris. So it would be unusual for me to refer someone to Chris.
But it seems quite strange that if this is what he did, if allegedly this is what he did, it would have been a symbiotic type relationship, you with your customers and him with his stash on the side, and you're saying that your customers are, it's noted that they are drug users. They like to take a hit here and there, and that would have been like a very good alliance. That would be an ally. That's what you call networking, and he would have been a good person to have in your corner. So to hear that you did not support his hustle, that's interesting to hear.
No, if if Chris, I mean, based on the allegations and the rumors out there, the rumors state that Chris was this major player in the drug world. That is the rumor, right? So why would I send, even if I knew that Chris was involved, I wouldn't. Why would I send someone to go buy $500 in marijuana from a big drug lord? I mean, that's an insult. That's an insult. You know what I mean? He needs to go to someone down in the whole town or Oystons or Bridgetown to sort it out.
That would be
a compromise.
No, it's not a compromise. The way you are describing it here is a compromise, because obviously, if they want a $10 pack or however they sell it, I've never bought drugs in my life, but however they sell it, however the pricing is, obviously, if he's a big-time, quote-unquote, drug dealer, no, he actually wouldn't be there to sell it. These people have their soldiers. But, like I said, if you are a businessman and he is a businessman and you two, that is locking hands, that is actually locking hand in hand. You have what your customers want, what he has, and it goes vice versa. So I'm not saying that he personally would be supplying your people, but I'm saying it could have been organized, that his soldiers are in place when you have people in town to do these exchanges. And it's interesting that if he, and they're saying that he was short on money, he was begging people, he knew that something was coming down the pipeline, because he started sweating a little bit for money. So why wouldn't you, a friend of 30 years, be in one of those pipelines? That's all I'm asking.
Well, you know, it's a good question, and it goes back to what I said. I've never seen or heard of anything to support the allegations that Chris was involved in drugs, so therefore there would be no basis for me to even consider him. If a client of mine wanted to have a little fun one night and needed to spend $200-$300 in drugs, I wouldn't have considered Chris in the first place, because I've never heard or seen anything to support the allegations that Chris was involved in drugs. All I know are the allegations and nothing else. I've never seen drugs in Chris's presence. I've never been anywhere with Chris where I've never seen Chris using drugs. I've never seen Chris even smoking a cigarette.
So 30 years. Okay, I know I'm beating, seems to be beating the dead horse here, but 30 years, a man would tell you how much woman he hit. A man would tell you where he put his, where, what legs he put his face between. A man would tell you next to anything. Guys talk to guys. And you're saying for 30 years, you're saying that you never knew of, heard of, smelled no drugs, nothing. You thought he was squeaky clean in terms of drugs?
Well, you know, because of the allegations, I told Chris I don't want to know anything, because I'm hearing these allegations all the time. People were even accusing me because I was so close to Chris. So I made a decision with, I had a discussion with Chris years ago. Listen, because of these allegations, let's not even have any discussion. If you want to talk about girls, we can be talked about girls. If we want to talk about anything else, we never talk about drugs, because that's a serious situation.
Yeah,
so
people can't compromise anything. People and I, and you know, we keep it straight here, Charlie.
Yes.
We are finding it hard to believe, because you do what you do. You have girls, and to think that someone that's around you that wants a girl and doesn't come to you for a girl, you'd be like, what the hell am I around this person for? I'm a businessman. If you want girls, I have 5, 4, how many, 10. I can get them for you. And this person wants that. this person wants it, and he's around you. He has the money to do it. He has the wherewithal to provide what you need. And you're going to say to him, you know what? You're my friend. I'm not going to let you have any of my girls. You can give my girls $1 million. I don't want it because you're my friend. That doesn't sound like your thing that makes sense. So, you know.
I'll tell you why it makes sense. I understand where you're coming from. And if we were talking about socially
thank you very much for joining us on Blog Talk. We are streaming live, and we are going to cut this show off here. Thank you so very much. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of this episode of Naked Departure Talk Show. If you would like to appear as a guest on the show, simply email our producer at nakeddeparture@gmail.com or message us directly from the show page. We would love to have you as a guest on the show. You can listen to a repeat of this episode at any time in the future. Simply go to our show page at blogtalkradio.com/nakeddeparture and follow the links. I would like to thank our guests, the discussion panel, and the production team. I would also like to thank the listeners for tuning in and giving us an audience. We will now leave you with the sweet jazzy sounds of Trade Winds by Alan Trotman and Jonathan Butler. Thank you.